From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
You need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing the Lost Commanders and Relics of the Old Republic, episodes 3 and 4 of Season 2. We've got the Coffee with Kenobi brew crew here intact, with Corey Club and Jeff McGee of Marvin Dog Media. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey, thanks. Well, I'm glad to be... I've done this before.
You have.
As have I, yes.
Yes, you have. You both have. And thank goodness for that. The show's better because of you two little buddies. Let's look. Go ahead, gentlemen. It's been a while since we've done a Rebels Reactions. Last time was, of course, when we had the return of Darth Vader. And it was an amazing beginning to the season. And we had a long break. And we've had an even longer break for Rebels Reactions because we did not get together for the Lost Commanders. And there were a lot of reasons for that. But one of the reasons is that it's a two-parter. And we thought we could throw them together into one blockbuster show. So, gentlemen, we'll break these down into two separate ones, of course. But we'll start with your overall opinions of The Lost Commanders. Jeff, let's start with you.
I just had one word when I watched this the first time. Graboids. Honestly, this one didn't do much for me. And I know, you know, after we went back and watched it the second time, we talked a little bit before we started recording about, you know, all of the... imagery and symbolism that is present in it after the fact. And that's true, but I just, it feels like a setup for the next episode. And I understand that you sometimes need that, but it seems like there was too much setup. We'll get more into what I think about it, obviously, but just my initial reaction was slightly above meh.
That's fair. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I wasn't overly shocked since we'd seen the previews of season two. We knew these commanders were going to come into place back into the fold as far as, introducing them into Rebels, the Rebels era. Overall, I thought it was a fun episode. Like Jeff said, it's a nice introduction to a two-parter. It was obviously leading up to a more expanded two-part version of getting to know these characters again, you know, for new viewers and for older viewers who are trying to get grips on Rebels so far. And what I felt like, though, I felt like it was a nice transition from what we'd kind of seen, all the big bad with Darth Vader and stuff. This was kind of nice, a kind of an adventure episode. I enjoyed the bright colors. A lot of comedy in this episode as far as the Rebels getting to know the Lost Commanders here. So, overall, I mean, yeah, it was okay for an overall opinion.
All right, well, I don't fault either of you for saying those things, because when I first watched this one, I was of a similar mindset where I thought, okay, you know, I waited a long time, and I wasn't necessarily disappointed, but I was far from ecstatic. And I don't know if it's because I had high expectations because Rex was coming back. And before we jump into the actual episode themselves, I've always liked Rex. I've never loved him or held him to the high regard that others have, but that changed for me once we got through Relics of the Old Republic, which we'll get to. It did bear a second viewing, which did bring out more important themes, which we will certainly tackle and approach. So let's just get right into it right now. At the beginning, we find out that there is a commander that the crew of the Ghost has to find to help them, because they have this instant dilemma. They have, do we fight or do we hide, which is what Ezra proposes. And then they get into this conflict where they decide, well, you know, we need allies, but we also can't help others without helping ourselves first. So which is it, gentlemen? What's the best thing to do when it comes to an important situation like this? People are in need. You have to help yourselves, too. It's all about balance, isn't it?
Absolutely. And sure.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Corey.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's coming off of, you know, Vader's big onslaught of you know, bringing his power to this series so far. They do need to kind of hide in a sense. And you posed it well, you know, what do they do in tactical situations, you know? And it seems like Ahsoka seems to have some comparison there. She knows how to get in touch with the folks and maybe playing this game all along, kind of hiding and coming out of hiding and doing such things. And the Rebels have too, but I think they need to, personally, I think they need to go a little bit of a hiding and kind of collect themselves, regroup a little bit, and be able to strike out again. You know, I'm kind of overtaken by the fact they're on this kind of command ship a little bit, and it seems like it's a little too much as far as they're rebelling so far, the small little fraction of it. It's like they're not so much just the Ghost crew anymore. There's the Ghost crew and then some, if you will. I feel like they have a little more power underneath their belts, which could hurt or harm them, you know. But I think in the context of either fighting or hiding, I think they do need to hide at this point.
I think Corey may be right. I did like the fact that we see pretty early on that the crew of the Ghost is sort of at cross purposes with the Rebellion, or at least Kanan is. You know, he is still very much on the side of the people they're trying to help rather than fighting this war. And I thought it was interesting that Ezra just jumped right in with his suggestion without even thinking. So, mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing a lot of really big progression on for his character. And I think, like you said, there are cases to be made for both. It's hard to retreat and regroup when you've got a fleet that large.
True.
Which and I think is what Corey was saying.
He was, I think. And then I also think that there's something to be said for, you know, starting something like a rebellion is so fragile. It's like playing Jenga, but you're playing it with billions of lives. So you have to be very careful about how you expand and build your tactical advantage, which is what they're trying to figure out. And speaking of tactical, Corey mentioned that as well, but they have to use a tactical droid to try to find this commander. And Ahsoka has put some little fun Easter eggs throughout these two episodes. And she says, you know, this tactical droids found my master and me a few times when we didn't want to be found. Ahsoka's featured prominently at the beginning of this episode, and she emphasizes repeatedly the importance of trust, and she gears it naturally towards Kanan. And we know, as consumers of Star Wars, what that means, don't we, Jeff?
Yes, but I have to ask, why wasn't she a bit more specific? Don't you think that that little tiff that we saw when they arrived could have been avoided if she had just given Kanan a little bit of warning? Or do you think she didn't because she knew he wouldn't go?
I think he wouldn't go. And I also think as a Jedi, she doesn't necessarily have the title of Jedi Master, but she's a Jedi Master,
right,
in my mind. And when you were an educator, when you were guiding someone, and she's mentoring Kanan silently, but she definitely is, you can't put the pieces together for them. If she tipped him off, he couldn't come to the conclusion that he eventually comes to anyway. So it's something that he had to come to on his own.
Yeah, I like that. But I agree with you, Jeff. You know, she could have given more evidence of, you know, you might not know what you're getting into as far as she knew Kanan well enough from the Clone Wars era to be able to know he won't be very happy meeting these old commanders and knowing that they were clones. And she seems to have a little bit of foreknowledge in that area, too. And then, of course, she rushes off to go on her own adventure, which I thought was like kind of, well, you could have gone with them, I guess. I mean, I guess she got bigger fish to fry. So
they're going to use her sparingly as they are Vader, I'm sure. Because they sure. still they said repeatedly, smart. This has to be, this is still the crew of the Ghosts. This is their show. And I'm grateful for that. So we finally do get to the planet. It's a beautiful area. Like you said, the bright colors. And right away, we see an old Republic tank that's used during the Clone Wars. And we meet the clones. And we've got the three clones back. We've got Gregor. We've got Rex. And we've got Wolf. So before we talk about specifically what they do, what do you guys think about these three and how they are portrayed?
Well, I'm glad that they chose those three because I, as you would expect, I had trouble keeping the clones straight for the majority of the Clone Wars. But I obviously remembered these three. And I love the way that they've aged the characters. I think they look great, which we had seen a few of them ahead of time at Celebration. But I like that they've each retained a bit of their personality, even though, which one is it that has gone kind of loopy?
Gregor. That'd be Gregor, yes.
But I did enjoy it a lot, and I like that they all looked old, and you have to be reminded, oh yeah, they aged twice as fast as a normal human.
That's right. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, it was cool meeting them again, seeing their kind of their digs as far as the tank, and kind of they're just kind of tricked out, you know, Waterworld style. You know, I've always had that feeling. I don't know why. When I saw this thing going across the landscape, it's a bright planet, which kind of brought kind of some hope in my mind in that case.
For
course,
sure.
You mentioned for Ahsoka wanting to get some more hope in their lives there. And it was very bright, but also, it's all in this like kind of this deserty type landscape. But they kind of play it off of like it is kind of like an ocean type thing. And they're just like these old crewmen, old seamen that are, you know, out for the hunt. And it's a lot of fun to meet him again, too. Like I said, they picked some great characters to reintroduce to us. And like I said, aged them well, aged their characters well. They're all distinct and all well done as far as, telling them apart, you know, with the scars and the shaved heads and whatnot. It was fun. I was missing Kevin Bacon, though, Jeff, like you mentioned. So I don't know where he was at.
Kevin Bacon? He's not in Waterworld.
From Tremors.
Oh, from Tremors, of course. How could I forget? Yeah, we'll get to the Tremors thing. There's a reference to a thousand times better of a film in this one, too, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, sure. I like them. I think Dee Bradley Baker is a phenomenal actor, and he really does. If you didn't know better, you wouldn't even know it was the same guy portraying the three. I thought that was masterful.
I always forget.
Right. I know. It's incredible. Well, and the Gregor thing, I must admit I'm a little conflicted. I understand they're doing the PTSD thing, the post-traumatic stress disorder with him. Because when we last saw him, it was on that four-episode droid arc that a lot of people didn't love. I personally thought it was brilliant. And he was left in a no-win situation, and now we know that he survived. But he is a little bit worse for the wear. Although he's still an effective warrior. And it's interesting, as soon as they meet the Jedis, which are Kanan and Ezra, Gregor thinks that the Jedi want revenge on them, and Rex explains, no, they weren't the Jedi who betrayed us. Those are different ways to look at Order 66, guys. And Corey, what did you think about those two revelations there?
Yeah, it was cool because Rex, obviously, what all he's been through, he's the leader of this little group, this little band, and he's got his head drawn tight, and he seems to be coming in with some fresh ideas, and he's thought everything through. It seems like Order 66 is just blown through the galaxy. You can kind of see it, how it affects everybody, even in the Rebels crew and their lives and their home planets and species and whatnot. And here we are, meeting the clones again, and seeing how they kind of fell out of everything. Was able to kind of pair themselves and pull themselves together and hide from the Empire and do their thing without, you know, they mentioned kind of hiding in plain sight type thing as far as keeping the Empire off their back. So having revelation, like you said, about the Jedi, the clones' reaction to the Jedi there was interesting. They all kind of had different perspectives. And you mentioned that Gregor wanted revenge. He's instantly in that state of mind going back to the Clone Wars and them him thinking that they were going to attack him and they were the evil counterpart there. And Rex explains more to them. So, it's interesting to see their dynamic as far as how, the this universe has kind of trudged on through the ages.
Well, also, too, the fact that Gregor says a Jedi won't revenge, a Jedi isn't supposed to get revenge. So it shows that the years have possibly skewed his interpretation of what happened for Order 66. And until this episode, I'd never thought about Order 66 from the clones' perspective. I mean, sure, there's the whole Chip series with Fives, which was beautifully done in Season 6 of the Clone Wars, but not to the point of where the clones were like the Jedi betrayed them, too. Now, these guys don't have their chips, but right. They still very much have their scruples and their foibles. And I don't know, there doesn't seem to be bitterness there with these three, but it stands to reason that it's a possibility for that to happen somewhere in the galaxy.
Well, and I think it's interesting that, you know, he says, see, I took when he said these aren't the Jedi that betrayed us. I took that to mean, remember, it wasn't the Jedi who betrayed us, that they'd figured out that they had been used. And I took the attack to be more self-preservation, not that they wanted to kill the Jedi. They just thought they were still hunting them down.
And honestly, that could be a whole other backstory we'll find out later, whether there's a crew of Jedi that maybe are hunting down these three. I mean, I don't know. That would be very un-Jedi-like, but there's got to be more to it, you know, than just this little slice of sample size of this conflict between the two.
Right.
And I also had the feeling that the Empire knew of their existence. Did you guys catch that? I mean,
the clones?
The clones' existence, yes.
Oh, yeah, because they say that a few times, because when they contact Kallus, he says it's the same clone that's given us a few delusional reports
previously. Sure.
So, yeah, definitely. So I think there's a lot there. And then Kanan doesn't refer to them as clones. I'm sorry, he does refer to them as clones. He doesn't refer to them as people, which I thought was interesting and also revealed quite a bit of his prejudice, too.
Well, but we saw some of that in the Clone Wars too, though. There were several of course, I guess it was mostly Krell who did that, and we found out later why he did, but I think we saw there were some Jedi who didn't maybe value the lives of the clones as much as others. So that didn't strike me as particularly unique, but you're absolutely right, it is very much in keeping with his character that he does not trust them, and it's an easier way to dehumanize them so that he can continue to harbor these ill feelings toward them.
Right. And perpetuate this, this anxiety and this anger that he has, which of course he knows he's not going to get in touch with. He mastered his anger at the end of season one against the Inquisitor, but you know, this is a very old wound, a very fresh wound. It's like a scar that's been picked at on him emotionally. Wouldn't you say, Corey?
I think so. I even think he felt that way when he met Ezra too. It was kind of a revelation inside him that Jedi still do exist, and that part of his life was still there, still, you know, that was still haunting him in a sense. So I think it's always coming with him in different pieces. We, like you mentioned too, he gets past that, and season one, he can control his anger and his fear. We talked about fear a lot last season, and it doesn't seem so much fear now that he's found Ezra and they've joined forces. But then this is a whole different part of his life. And you mentioned, too, the clones having, PTSD. Mm-hmm. And Kanan has that as well. So I think he's struggled with a lot of different factors, too. So,
Good point. Let's transition a little bit to the scene with the Jupa. And, Jeff, you already mentioned the whole idea of Tremors. did you notice all the Jaws references in this?
Yeah.
Well, I was too busy going, are they going Tremors or Dune? But now that you mention it, yeah, Jaws as well. It's
huge. I mean, they did mention it on StarWars.com, which kind of tipped me off to it. But then when you watch it, I mean, they're on, the front of the boat, and they've got the fishing line in. It keeps going deeper and deeper. They've even got the outline of a jaw of teeth of an animal in the front, very much like the orca from Jaws. You could say that Gregor, who's half crazy, is very similar to Quint, who is half crazy. And even the music and the theme when they are hunting for this animal, I thought it was a lovely little homage. And Dave Filoni's been known to do this quite a bit in the Clone Wars, too, with a tip of his cap to other famous films.
Well, also, Dan, I want to mention, too, you jumped to literary terms, and I thought Moby Dick, for the terms of, he said something, it was kind of the big one that was out there. I couldn't think what he called it, Gregor. He kind of mentioned the one that got away type thing that maybe tracked down before. So it has that play on it as well.
It was really well done. It was almost over the top. It was so in your face, but it was still fun. What isn't fun, though, is that the fact that they use Zev as bait, and there's a bit of irony here of using a lone survivor, because Zev is obviously the lone survivor of his race, and there are other lone survivors. Not many clones are left, and they are using him as bait. Let's talk about the ethics of this scene. It was played for laughs, but I think there's more there.
Yeah, I kind of knew they were going with that, like he was using for bait type thing, but
he got over it pretty quick.
He got over it pretty quick, but also felt like it showed me the side of the clones that they're willing to survive by any means necessary, you know, even if they're playing dirty a little bit.
I don't think they wanted to kill him. But
self-preservation, like you mentioned, it was Gregor who was ready to jump on the Jedi at the first turn when they first met him. He was ready to fight. And in this sense, it's more of like, I need to get, you know, I need to live. I need to keep living. And if it means sacrificing, you know, somebody who's close to me, then that needs to be done to be able to move on. And I don't necessarily think he's evil by any sense, but I also think that he's a few screws loose a little bit. So he's on the edge a little bit, I think, for his character. But to, like you mentioned, to use Zeb as a lone survivor by lone survivors is very desperate, a very desperate act. Maybe they didn't know that at the time. But yeah,
that's a good point. And also, do Rex and Wolf know that is Gregor's plan all along?
I thought they did. Yeah, and I took it the whole thing. I took it to mean that they didn't ever think he was really in any danger. That they knew how this was going to pan out because they've probably done this with one of them before.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't think that he was ever in any real danger as far as they were concerned, that they had that much faith in their abilities and probably in Zeb's ability to survive inside as well.
That is definitely a much more optimistic way to look at it, which I appreciate.
I just thought the whole sequence was silly and went on far too long.
I agree, and I think that sort of hurt this episode a little bit.
It just made it feel like filler, made it feel like we were just killing time. And so I kind of thought they could have combined these two episodes into one really tight, tense episode. But
that's fair. Sure.
It also plays off of Kanan and, you know, allowing him to use Zeb as a – you think he'd be a little smarter than that. Like, well, you're not going to use my friend for bait.
Yeah, he doesn't put up as much of a fight for disliking the clones as much as he does. Yeah, I think there's that shows maybe there's a part of him that knows he needs to trust. I mean, Ahsoka told him, plus he's a smart guy anyway. But let's shift. We're talking a lot about Kanan and the clones, but they really hit it at the end of this episode. Kanan expresses frustration towards Ezra, and then he tells his story of Order 66, which we've never really heard told on the show. Of course, we've seen it in the Greg Weisman comic. But Kanan talks to Ezra about it, and I thought it was quite symbolic that as he's telling this story, he takes apart his lightsaber and puts it back on his belt, a la most of season one. Then Rex shows up and tells Kanan, "We all have a choice," and he refers to his clone chip and taking it out. Kanan apparently seemed to know about this whole chip thing, and Pablo did mention on Rebels Recon that there's a story there that's going to be told later of how Kanan found out that. It's probably going to be in the comic series, I would guess, but a lot of symbolism in this particular scene, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's him dismantling his lightsaber. That I always feel like that's like a knee-jerk reaction for Kanan. He's still, you know, looking to hide his Jedi ways in a sense, and maybe in this scene that he's contemplating that with himself. You know, debating if he should continue to, you know, wear that on his belt and give these clones a little bit of fear in their conversation, or that trust factor, like you mentioned too. He's looking to trust them. Should I put my lightsaber away and, you know, trust them and not be so on the defensive and have it, you know, put together and in hand type thing. Of course, Ezra's there to lighten the mood as well. And we show that, you know, we see that combination of master and mentor, and then Rex walks in and kind of gives his two cents on the whole subject and hearing that story. One flaw I did kind of notice that Kanan does, he pulls a Luke out when he looks down the barrel of the lightsaber.
That was the point I was going to make. Well, yeah, totally looked right down the barrel. I thought,
it was taken apart though. He puts it together and then looks down at it
and then he takes it apart again.
Yeah.
It was fully functional
when he did that.
You're right, it's a loop there.
I assume that was supposed to be an homage or something, but I noticed it. I was like, "What is he? What are you doing?"
Well, he doesn't have an eye patch, so that's good. What did you think about some of the symbolism in this scene? And honestly, the conversation he has with Rex, I thought that was all too short and way too quick to cover a pretty heavy topic. But maybe that's how it is.
Well, I think that we have to keep in mind the target audience for this show is kids, which could explain why they spent so much time on the I'm refusing to call it anything but a graboid. I apologize, but I think that they paid it ample time to get the point across, but not enough that it would bore the kids that are watching the show. And again,
but it's such an important part of the narrative that they've been building to for over a year.
This is true. That's very true.
It's probably going to come back. I mean, I'm sure it will.
I would have to imagine that it will, because again, we got a five issue comic series about it. So I have to imagine that it's going to come back, and this is just, sort of one more layer they peeled away for both characters. Because I guarantee you Rex and Kanan are going to butt heads on a mission at some point later on this season.
Oh, for sure. I just thought it was so incredibly interesting that he takes apart as he's telling his story. It's like he's regressing, and not necessarily as a character, because he's now regressing as a character. He actually grows some more. But he jumps back into a bit of a childlike state. He's weaponless. He's powerless. He disarms himself to tell the story about how he felt disarmed and betrayed by people who were like brothers to him. A very powerful moment. We do find out more about the clones, though. Hera is giving Kanan a pep talk, and the way she reacts to the whole notion that the clones are there, she doesn't seem surprised. I think she and Ahsoka chat a lot more than they let on. We found out that they saved billions of lives, including Hera. So now we know. We did see this again in the Clone Wars themselves when they showed Hera as a little girl. But I thought that was a nice callback.
Yeah, I agree. And just going back real quick to what you were saying about Kanan regressing, it also him focusing so much on what happened in the past caused him to miss what was happening in the present, which was the probe droid coming on board.
Mm-hmm.
Right after he left. So again, you look too far at the past, you look too hard at the past, you miss what's happening in your present. I thought it was great. And it's a nice reminder that, the clones did do a lot of good and probably did some good even after Order 66. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good. It was a nice reminder and I appreciated it. And I hope that we get to learn a little more about what happened after Order 66 as well.
Can I mention too, you mentioned Hera, her kind of involvement in the Clone Wars, and she kind of, like I said, gives Kanan a pep talk. Am I mistaken about maybe reading, it was maybe a Star Wars Insider short story about her and her father? Maybe I'm totally off point here.
No, I know what you're saying. There was the short Clone Wars
you mentioned?
Yeah, well, the whole thing of Lords of the Sith is all about Hera's father, Cham. Mm-hmm. Was it Cham?
Right.
Yeah, Syndulla. So
Cham Syndulla. Yeah. So when I heard this play out, I did think back to, I was like, oh yeah, we have seen this earlier in a comic book form or short story form or some sort. I couldn't grab a hold of what it was and wonder if you guys knew, but. I also want to say when mentioning Hera, she did this, had to stay on the ship. I felt her absence was. I don't know. She seems like she just always says like, "Oh, I'll just stay behind and fix things," and it seems to play that key. And this episode kind of lowered that for me as far as
I thought it was kind of cheap.
Back.
Yeah, it was kind of a cheap way to keep She and Chopper out because they only had room for so many characters. I thought it was a little amateur hour writing, but
interesting. Well, I have some theories about that, but we will talk about why that happened when we get to Relics of the Old Republic. The final thing really for this episode before we wrap this one up is Wolf. We found out he didn't give Ahsoka the messages to Rex that Ahsoka sent. Wolf did not send. He said he wants to protect his friends from the Empire, and that makes sense to me, but the Empire is coming on them fast and quickly, and they're obviously very dangerous. Do you guys think Wolf gets off too easy in this little scene?
I think his turnaround is too quick. And yeah, I think he gets off way too easy.
It's kind of an abrasive turnaround, to be honest. I mean, that does show the loyalty the clones have towards one another. But you'd think that Kanan would be more... He's had plenty of reason to not trust the clones already, and the whole thing with the Jupa, and then this. I'm surprised he didn't just bail altogether.
Me too. Same here. Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is...
But then again, that shows who he is. I mean, he knows enough to trust his instinct, not his heart sometimes.
I agree with that. I think he got off too easy. But it seems like there was a lot going on towards the end of this episode. You know, the rebel ship wasn't starting up, and they were kind of like stuck in a position where there's no reason to worry about this now. And I would hope that maybe it would down the line, they would kind of confront that a little bit and see why he would be doing that. You know, for some reason, I mean, Rex should be hurt because what we see in the end of the next episode is a nice reunion. So, you know, you get all these mixed emotions, I think, too, from just these characters kind of coming back together. But we get to see them through these hard times and see what they really, how they progressed. So maybe this is something that, you know, we'll see later on down the line where he has to kind of come around again and find out people still need him to do the right thing.
Could be. Well, gentlemen, before we give our final grades, any last thoughts on The Lost Commanders? Jeff, let's start with you.
With very few exceptions, it did feel like narratively it was mostly set up. And I do appreciate the little nuances that we did get with some of the character work that was done. I just feel like overall it didn't really go anywhere.
What about you, Corey?
Yeah, I think it was a setup episode, but I also think it was a nice introduction to old characters. We had to meet them eventually. Somehow we knew this was coming up. And I think it was nice to see where they've kind of been since Order 66 and how they've kind of come through that and then meet these new characters and then their first impressions. You know, we get to see meet them again and see what they're doing. And, you know, it's nice to be able to see these characters like we did with Ahsoka last season. It was nice to see, oh, cool, some fresh faces meeting some old faces and see how they're going to clash type thing. And it's always about, in Star Wars, always about seeing that how these new characters are going to meet the old characters and what's going to happen. I think it was a nice introduction to the clones themselves, and I'm excited to see more. But the overall thoughts were just more of a, it could have more beefed up more, but I think they're really relying heavily on the two-part series.
Yeah, I think it wasn't so much it was a two-parter for me as the fact is that the clones are interesting. I don't think – I'm still not 1,000% convinced there's enough there to carry – to be like the driving force, the MacGuffin of an episode. But I'm just going to have to hold on and trust that everyone is – that Dave and everyone is going to do a great job and bring that through, because I do think Rex is interesting. But I'm not convinced that he is – the be-all end-all of Star Wars heroes. And I hope I'm not committing Star Wars sacrilege here, but I think he's cool, and I really like what happens in Relics of the Old Republic, which we're going to get to very soon. But I just don't know that there's enough there for the clones overall to drive an entire episode. Am I being too harsh?
I don't think so. I think they're – I don't know. It's hard to tell because even – all these characters that we've met so far have been from small old groups, small old fractions, and just to add them to this mixing pot is okay with me, because it's always, the Rebellion's always kind of been a hodgepodge of different characters from different backgrounds joining for a greater cause. And this seems like right up their alley.
Jeff, what do you think? Too harsh?
I think so, because I think there's so much material to be mined with what has happened to them in the last 13 years, 15 years. So I think that there is definitely something there to be discussed, but I just think they need to make better use of them.
Fair enough. 14 years. Well, no. So it's 19 years after Revenge of the Sith. Actually 20 years after Revenge of the Sith, because season one was 1 year long, correct?
Right, but
time,
I thought
the timeline always gets wonky.
I thought A New Hope was 18 years after Revenge of the Sith.
Why did I think it was 19?
18 or 19. Either way, this
would be. You're thinking 18 plus Rebels Season 1, right?
I'm pretty sure it's 19 years.
Give or so, and this takes place, Season 1 took place 5 years before that, correct?
Yes, I think so. Now I thought I knew until
now. We're doing math, and this is not something that Jeff is good at. So
yeah, I am not either. As Corey and I discussed quite a bit today, actually.
Well, let's let our listeners weigh in. How?
Yes, but tell me. Let's go, guys, with your final grade for Lost Commanders.
Who's going first? I'll go first. I would give this a B. I didn't enjoy it for the most part, but I did like some of the character work that we did, some character progression that we did get. And like Corey said, I did like the colors a lot too.
Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I go with Jeff. I go with a B for Bacon and say that, you know, I would say it was a lot of fun to watch episode.
Bacon.
And it was a lot of fun to see these characters again. I'm excited to see where they'll go. But I think there was a lot more to, like you said, to be mined here. There's a lot more, a lot more that could have been done with this episode rather than just kind of draw out as far as meeting, greeting each other. So it was fun. I think it was a nice new area to see and expand on. But I'm excited to see more.
I must admit, gentlemen, I'm quite surprised that you both gave the grades you did because the B is still pretty high. I'm going to say this is a C.
Wow.
It could easily be a C minus, but it's definitely a C. There's it's not because it's a part one of a two-parter. I thought it stood fine on its own. I just think that some of the conflict was breezed over a little too smoothly, and I understand that there's a mission, and Kanan is able to be more mature and put his personal feelings aside, but I'm looking forward to seeing what we talk about when we get to Relics of the Old Republic, which we will get to right after this word from Tops.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Now let's go in and break down Relics of the Old Republic. For my money, a much stronger episode than the first one we talked about, Lost Commanders. Let's go ahead and start with our overall opinions of Relics of the Old Republic. I'll start on this one. I'm going to say, as I mentioned, it's a bit stronger. I think this entire episode is so full of metaphor that I almost wept. It was so awesome. There's just a lot more going on, and we get the return of AT-ATs plus a beautiful, beautiful moment at the end that I think fans absolutely love. So what about you, Corey?
Yeah, it was better than Lost Commanders, but also it tied into that. So we're coming right off of the kind of a big cliffhanger from that episode. There looks like everybody's kind of in a tight bind and the Empire's bearing down on them. Overall, I think it was a lot of fun. Had a lot of teamwork atmosphere. They were forced to work together, even though some maybe didn't like it necessarily from all the angst of last episode. I also thought they put a lot of trust in each other. We talked about trust last episode, and this was even more trust, I think, even for these characters who had just met and looking to work together. And we noticed how it called back to Clone Wars for me. I'm not a huge, you know, Clone Wars fan, but that Jedi and clone trooper relationship was built back in, and obviously Dave Filoni's at the helm, so he's playing a lot hard on that. But this is different times. This isn't the Clone Wars saga. This is Rebels, and this is a time of despair, and they're looking to just get through. And I think overall it was a lot of fun to see Kanan and Ezra work together, and I also felt Ezra really shined bright in this episode as far as taking the lead on a lot of things. And she did. He actually did, I think, last episode too. So he's really stepped out this season so far.
Jeff, what about you? Overall opinions of Relics of the Old Republic?
I enjoyed this one quite a bit more than the last episode. And, you know, talking about our grades, Corey, do you think that Dan is harsher in his grading because he's an educator than you and I are?
Yes, I think he does. Yeah, he's over there checking papers and is really stubborn on some students. I think he's just putting grades all over the place and just frets and rolls and lays awake at night. So
I think it means something different to him than it does to us.
It could. I don't give grades, gentlemen. I bestow what the students earn.
Like a crown on the head or something like that? Or
spoken like a true teacher.
Let's go ahead and look
but,
at it.
Going back to what I was saying, though, is I did like it a lot. And I like you. I had a little bit of a problem. We'll talk about it when we get there. I had a little bit of a problem with the walker showing up, AT-ATs or AT-ATs, depending on your preferred nomenclature there. But I did enjoy this one quite a bit. And this is the one this is the episode I was hoping to get with the last episode.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's by the way, Rebels is 5 years before A New Hope. And the difference between the space between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope is 19 years.
He's looking for the extra credit.
So we're between 14 and 15 years after Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith.
Exactly. Now just
16.
Oh, sorry. That's right. So right away, I mentioned at the top of this particular discussion that there are a lot of metaphors that are replete throughout this, and we've got two. Storms coming up on the clones and the crew of the ghosts, and then Hera floating in limbo when the Empire shows up. What can you guys make of those? Putting you on the spot.
Well, it's the storm coming is pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need much explanation there or much discussion.
Have you met me? There's a lot to discuss here.
Well,
I'll pick it apart. Yeah.
Well, this is true. Not that there's not a lot to discuss. I don't think there's a lot of not a lot of mystery there about what that could mean. But I did like I loved the way it was animated. Just to talk about a little bit of the technical portion of the episode, I loved the way that storm was animated. It was just creeping up on them, and it was this dust cloud that was just always threatening. So I really enjoyed that, and I did like that. That it was ever present and that they did actually go into it. That was my favorite part.
It was great. And you almost forget the technology is so advanced. You almost forget you're watching animation of this particular style. It's incredible, really.
Well, especially when you're just looking at machinery.
It's true.
You're not looking at human characters or I guess living characters.
Right. Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys. I think the comparison from the storm coming is obviously, I mean, things are going to happen this season that are big and bad. I think we'll see a lot of, you know, revenge tactics from the Empire looking to track everybody down. And there's something's coming. We met that in the very first episode with Vader. So that's a big opening. But this seems like, you know, maybe there's more to come, obviously. But you mentioned... Hera floating out in limbo space there.
Yes.
And it puts in my mind, like, she's always been in limbo some of these episodes where she's just waiting for someone to show up, or she's playing rendezvous, or, you know, it seems to be like that's her position. Not to diminish her character by any means. I love Hera. I also felt like, you know, with the Empire kind of flying right over the top of her, don't they see her just laying out in the middle of space, pick her up and capture her? I mean, isn't this the ship they've been looking for forever? And Agent Kallus is right there. I mean, I felt like it was a little, I mean, she shut everything down, I think, to kind of, you know, not pick up a signal, but there was no asteroid field. There was no garbage chute. There was, you know, it was just the ghost ship sitting out in the middle of nowhere. And I felt like she was just waiting to be picked up, and I thought that where it was kind of where it was going to go. I never got there, but I also felt the sandstorm was a little convenient for the Empire bearing down on the group here on the planet. So I felt like, oh man, in the beginning of this episode, I really felt like, oh, this is really coming together for them on their side, just because they got a little outsmarted at the end of the last episode. So I like you mentioned, Jeff, I was glad they went into the storm. rather than, you know, try to get away from it and have that be a kind of a Mad Max type race to get out of it type thing. That's why I thought that was going to go, but it didn't. But it was interesting. So
you bring up a lot of interesting points. I think obviously, yes, the storm coming, clouds, everything it does, it is symbolic of what the future is going to be like for everybody involved. But the storm and the cloudiness affects three phases of or factions here. I mean, obviously the crew of the Ghost, the storm indicates turbulence and chaos and not necessarily knowing where to get. But you have to trust in the Force to get through these storms, which obviously is going to be important for the two main characters. For the clones, it's Cloud's things because they're seeing a new way of life and they're entering into uncharted territories because they really don't have someone to follow. So they have to follow a new group, the Rebellion, which is clearly the opposite of what happened with what happened to the Old Republic. And then the Empire, too, has to meet this storm, this chaos, which the storm is the Rebellion heading their way. And it clouds their judgment. They're arrogant enough to go into it blind, thinking they have all the answers and they can take care of the smaller, insignificant enemy. Clearly, we know how that works out.
The thing that struck me was the clones, or at least Rex, and I think all three of the clones really had every bit of faith in the Jedi to lead them.
Wasn't that beautiful?
And it's because they've seen the Jedi in action. You know, all through the Clone Wars, they saw the Jedi in action. Whereas if you go back to the original trilogy, people didn't know what to expect when Luke was doing certain things because they just had no experience with Jedi. So it was a nice reminder that even though these guys have not seen a Jedi in almost 2 decades, or I guess a decade and a half, depending on our new math, that they still remember just how powerful they are and have every faith in them, even if the Jedi don't have that much faith in themselves.
Right. And then the whole thing with Hera floating in limbo, all the Empire shows up. I think there's a lot here. You could take it on a few levels, but she is floating, waiting for to see what the Empire does because she wants to act, but she's also good enough to wait and be passive until the time is right to strike. She's clearly the most intuitive of the bunch as far as that goes. But also, she seems very dependent on what happens with Kanan to an extent, which is not necessarily a pro-feminist analysis of that. There's trust there, and there's honesty, and there's an integrity between the two in their relationship. It is quite sound and quite poignant. But the fact that she's floating and waiting shows two things to me. It shows how clever and how capable she is. And it also shows that she's very much having to wait to see what everyone else does, which can be good and can be bad.
Well, you mentioned Hera and Kanan and their relationship, and they're very much in love in their relationship. She's, you make a good point. She's waiting for Kanan. She doesn't want to leave him behind type of thing. If she's feels like she's in danger, she doesn't want to take off and leave them stranded for whatever reason. And certainly she doesn't know necessarily what's going on down there with her, you know, systems off. So I like that, Dan. That's a good comparison there as far as their relationship.
And she and I did not say she isn't powerful. She's extraordinarily powerful. She's the leader of the crew. She's absolutely the leader of the crew, and that's been confirmed in epic battles by Adam Bray among other places too. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she has to wait for him, it doesn't seem to be that she's waiting because she's can't do anything without him. Or because she's waiting for him to grow,
her family.
To get to really to where she is. She's the mother. She's the leader. Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about Rex and the clones and sort of looking at the characters of the clones themselves. We see the real bravado from Rex's character, and I think this perhaps more than anything is one of the reasons why people are drawn to him. And this actually elevated his status in my eyes when he said, "You better bring a better class of soldiers than these stormtroopers," when he talks to Kallus through that interaction. I thought that was a wonderful, powerful moment that showed and reminded us why these clones are a force to be reckoned with.
When I thought Kallus's response was appropriately callous, given his name.
true.
You know, he says, "Don't underestimate them. Plus, I have many to go through, basically." Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter because I have an unlimited supply of bodies.
Right. And it also shows his complete lack of respect for both humanity and for clones, too.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah. Now that you guys say that in this discussion, it makes me think, like, even if Kallus had clones, he would just go clone himself some more to throw at them. that he just shows his integrity for the those underneath him. It's interesting that he would just like, he's going to get the mission done no matter what.
Well, he helped to wipe out all of Lassan, so we know that he doesn't have a lot of respect for life anyway. I still believe there's more to him than meets the eye, and maybe there isn't.
Yeah, we'll see that. Yeah, I always liked him from the very beginning, and he's been kind of
the voice.
Maybe it's the voice. Yeah.
Yeah, David Oyelowo is amazing.
Callus always seems to be have the trick up his sleeve, and honestly, I'm surprised he's still running the ship there, as he is in his his status. You know, I thought that just from last season. He's just kind of been a force to reckon with. It pops up, and he seems to always be maybe one step behind the Rebels a little bit,
right,
as we see in this episode.
Well, and I'm going to talk here about speed, and Dave Filoni talked about this on Rebels Recon. It was quite funny. He said, one of the challenges to this episode is it's the AT-ATs, and I know Jeff has some interesting thoughts on the AT-ATs, which I want to talk about. And he says, the challenge for this episode is when we said, okay, full speed ahead, and they crank it, and they still go.
Right.
You know, they're kind of trucking along, but the speed or lack thereof, I think, is powerful and also shows the importance of teamwork and the mentorship of Ezra by Rex. So there's quite a bit here, so let's tackle any of these, but I'm especially when it comes to the AT-ATs. Jeff, let's start with you.
Well, I was excited to see the AT-ATs, and then I thought, wait a minute. This presents a problem for Jeff, because when we see the AT-ATs at the Battle of Hoth, it seems to me, having had contact with people who had faced them before, they should have been better prepared to attack them. Don't you think?
Well, how do we know this is the, for one thing, in Empire, no one from this particular attack was on that battle.
Right, but you have to assume if they were not surprised by the AT-ATs there, so you have to assume that at least somebody in that crew had seen them before. And doesn't that seem like intel you would pass on to the Rebel Alliance? It would be, you know, would go into a memo that would go out to everybody.
I think I can bring you some peace with this, because the whole AT-AT, the first appearance of the AT-ATs was sort of skewed a little bit from Star Wars number one, the Marvel comic. And they've said also that this is the AT-AT before the next one. I think every time we see AT-ATs, they're like 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. They're always updated to a degree that they have to come up with new ways to defeat them, because the Empire is always upgrading their tech.
It's interesting you say that, because you know, the way they take them down, like you mentioned, Jeff, comes from Sabine, who we haven't talked about a whole lot from this episode. She comes to shoot him in the neck. Type thing, and I assumed from the last episode they wouldn't use that anchor, that laser anchor, mm-hmm. of some way somehow, and trip them up that way. Assuming from my knowledge of going in from Empire, so yeah, it's interesting that they come up, and you talked about the lack of speed. I wanted to mention that. So they said full speed ahead, and they just kind of okay, you know. I just thought it was like just an inside joke, in a little bit.
Yes.
So I thought it was a lot of fun to see that. But also, I mean, in any sense, the tank that the clones are using is not much faster. So mm-mm. for them to catch up, four legs versus a six leg tank.
Right.
You know, there's. I mean, I'd like to see them race if it was up for me. So, but it was interesting that the two different vehicles against each other. We don't see that enough. You talk about toys and collecting and stuff, and we see these things. And I wanted to mention before that the tank would be kind of cool toy to play with, to have as a setup. And you always race the vehicles you have as toys to see who's faster or who's getting away or whatnot. And to have these ships kind of battle each other a little bit, we don't necessarily see a whole lot of that slow moving tank versus tank combativeness. So this was, I think, it was a lot of fun.
Jeff, anything else on the AT-ATs in this particular moment?
No, I really did. I'm with Corey. I loved this battle, and I thought it was a lot of fun. And the way that they used the lack of speed to ratchet up the tension. I thought was spot on.
It did make you squirm a little, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. And it was very much like...
the whole episode's about waiting, honestly. Well, and
it reminded me of The Hunt for Red October,
mm-hmm.
where they ran silent, and they were running silent, and they were hoping nobody could find them on radar, or sonar, or rather. And so it reminded me a lot of that, of like a submarine battle as well.
Right. No, I think that's a good point. I do love also... that we see this growing relationship, this burgeoning relationship, there you go, Craig, between Ezra and Rex. I'm interested in that and how that's going to play out and what Kanan's going to think about that eventually as well.
Well, what we saw from the last episode and Rex kind of poking his head into their discussion before about, you know, Kanan's background in the Jedi, I felt like, oh, man, he's really going to become, you know, this mentor figure possibly for a different way for Ezra. And I felt like that he was dipping into Kane's role a little bit, but from a different standpoint of maybe, I don't want to talk like army tactics or something like that, and trusting the Jedi and from a different perspective of not, you know, being a Jedi. You mentioned too, Rex and Kanan, it's, I don't know. I feel like we mentioned this before. They're gonna butt heads. And I think when Ezra's comes between them, he's gonna come between him a lot because he's the focus here. He's the next generation in a fact to where he's making decisions and such. And it's interesting to see, you know, in this episode when they're fighting off these AT-ATs to see them work together, yet like you mentioned too, Jeff, trust the Jedi and then again Ken having to trust their ways as well. So. I don't know. It's interesting to see this. So I don't necessarily know where I was going with all that, but.
Well, I've got about 4 or 5 points here that are all basically centered around the battle. And I want to focus specifically on what happens with Kanan and Ezra and how they have to basically trust Rex and Rex has to trust them to lead them in the middle of this storm, literally where the Empire is and the AT-ATs are circling them, which was a very strong moment full of tension. And there's a chance here for a lot of bravado, but it's quelled because you have to let go of your conscious self. You got to act on instinct. So many nods to A New Hope here with the music and everything. Let's talk about anything that happens in the storm, from how they walk into the storm to when they finally escape and take down these walkers. Jeff, let's start with you.
I loved this sequence. And again, it goes back to what I was saying before about Rex having really no problem trusting the Jedi to do what it is that Jedi do because he's seen them do it before. I do wonder if he had been around Kanan a little longer, if he would have the same faith in him that he does show. But I wonder if it's easier for them to trust the Jedi because they are soldiers and you know, they were born to do battle. He says at one point, you know, this is what soldiers do. So they're perfectly, not perfectly content, I shouldn't say, but they're ready to lay down their lives for, you know, their crew. And, it's like Corey, I don't know where I was going with that. But that was the thing that just stuck out the most to me, was that, you know, Rex has more faith in Kanan and Ezra than Kanan does. It seems That's like true. To me.
That's true. Corey, what about you? Anything in this entire battle, this sequence?
Yeah, I mean, the way they set it up too, they seemed like they had a plan to go into the storm and trick the AT-ATs some way, but they were trusting the Jedi to do so. And I thought it was interesting that Kanan and Ezra split up. And they didn't slip the way I expected them to do. They mentioned, the wanting Ezra to take the shot, to the neck of the AT-AT. And,
that surprised me a lot.
It surprised me. I thought, me why too. Would you give this to the young kid who's not, you know, he's not a military background. He's not necessarily well versed in the Jedi ways all that much right now. He's unsure of himself in this scene where he's saying, why me? You know, why would I do this? But you see again, the faith that Kanan has in Ezra back to season one, and that even plays off of Rex saying, oh, okay, I kind of get it. You know, I can trust this young Jedi as well. And then knowing he's worked with a lot of younglings as well with Ahsoka and such. So he knew the trust factor is there. And we talked about trust going into these two episodes, and it seems like, you know, Rex is overflowing with trust, and it's kind of pouring into Kanan a little bit. We talked about their comparisons, and in the scene where they're both trusting Ezra to take the shot and make it a good shot, in order to do so, and notes here you've got mentioned that, you know, he takes Rex's helmet with him, Ezra does, and it's cool. It threw me back to Ezra's scene where he was collecting the helmets of the Empire in a sense, and kind of, you know, trying them on and playing around with them and stuff. This is another helmet from the old days, and it was interesting to put that on to help him fight through the sandstorm to get a good shot. And you said it harkens back to A New Hope. I definitely thought A New Hope in this scene where he was taking the shot of Luke and the trench run and being able to, you know, be guided by the Force, even though you're blind or your eyes are closed or you're being, you know, you're wearing a helmet or whatnot. It's a lot of trust going into this episode, and Ezra had to be, you know, get through one more trial before he could move on to the next step.
Right. Well said, guys. Well said. That's why it's fun to do a show like this with you two, because we opened my mind to a lot of different possibilities, which I really appreciate. Yeah, Rex puts his fate in the hands of Kanan and Ezra. They have to fly blind literally through the sandstorm. Kanan has to ask Rex to trust him, and he just does this while his lightsaber is disassembled, so he's still keeping himself open, both literally and figuratively, to the influence of a clone. And then this, the tank is surrounded by the AT-ATs. You're the only one who can see in this storm. I thought that was powerful, too, because he's the one that has the vision, and he is not clouded by history. He wasn't born when Order 66 happened. So, of course, he can see through the storm because he has no preconceived bias or notion. And it's shown even more powerfully when Rex gives Ezra his helmet, which I thought was very much like a Mean Joe Green part where he throws him the helmet, he catches so Ezra puts on the helmet of Rex, and then he literally is seeing the world through the clone's eyes, which I thought was very powerful. And then, of course, in order to take care of what he needs to, he takes the clone helmet off, and he's just himself exposing all these elements in the sandstorm, which could literally blind him. And he takes a shot. You even get the music from the trench run. And when it's done, you can hear "Great shot, kid," which harkens back to Han Solo. Mm. So there was a lot going on there, which I thought was really nice. And some, what I appreciate about Rebels is that they give a lot of homages to Star Wars and the history of Star Wars without being obnoxious and kind of winking at the camera. They just put it out there, and you can enjoy it, and you can disseminate it any way you want, or you can ignore it and just enjoy the actual story that you're watching. So kudos to them for handling that scene with grace and dignity.
Yeah, it's never at the expense of the flow of the story.
That's right. Who wrote the notes here? Deus Ex Machina. I'm impressed.
Oh, that was me. I just thought I was going to ask you guys, you know, they get a message back in the Star Destroyer when they're about to close in and says, "Oh, Vader has said he needs us back, blah, 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 blah." Do you guys think that was a little too convenient, or are we just not giving the Empire enough credit for having playing a longer game, I guess, on this one?
You know, when that happened, I thought that was the hardest part in this episode for me to kind of take under knowledge. I thought, why, you know, first of all, they didn't pick up Hera, which bothered me, but then they just took off out of nowhere under Vader's orders, and I felt like, couldn't they just go like, "Hey, listen, you know, we're tracking on the rebels you're looking for, or so we think, or whatnot, and, you know, just give us 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know?" It's just like, I feel like it was too convenient, and maybe I'm just not seeing the long game, like you mentioned, Jeff. And I would hope that there's something else bigger going on. This is just a small potatoes type thing, or that was so they think. And I don't know. It shows where the Empire is. Something like they're like, even like I can't think of it. Kallus was kind of saying, "Well, I'll throw all the stormtroopers at you as much as I can." You know, they're over zealous and they're thinking that they'll get this done, and don't worry about them, we'll just come back to them when we get a chance, or whatever the case may be. They're just being very jovial with their resources and whatnot. So I don't know if that was you know, their wrong move, and now that it's to the advantage of the rebels, I don't know.
My guess is, if I had to guess, that they are tracking them somehow. They're hoping that they're giving up this ship in the hopes that they will lead them back to a convoy. The only thought that I had.
Oh, I see.
It's not. That's good. I like that. I think the reason that Hera wasn't picked up. Well, yes, this is definitely a ship that's got to be in their post office as most wanted. I think the fact that she turns off all of the systems and the power, the Empire is not organic. It's very technologically based. So if she's floating there in space and none of the systems are on, they're not going to bother to use their eyes when they're so reliant on technology. So, of course, they're going to ignore it. And that ignorance of the human spirit is what ends up bringing down the fall of the Empire anyway.
It's true.
How's that? You feel more at peace?
I can get underneath that a little bit more because it's
the Vader thing.
Well, I was going to say that towards the end of this episode, they do, you know, they talk about, you know, the whole reason that Star Destroyer took off was because of, under Vader's orders, and it was to go, pick somebody up? Is that?
I mean, Vader wants to talk to him. I mean, so boom, that's why this scene didn't bother me in the least. If anything, Deus Ex Machina is when the Jedi come out of the sky. I mean, that's literally what Deus Ex Machina is, but. This just shows you the power of Vader. Even with a high-ranking, you know, Imperial Security Bureau member like Kallus there hunting down Jedi, they don't know that it's necessarily the Jedi they've been chasing from Lothal. They just know there's a rumor of some Jedi. We also know from earlier on that there have been a lot of similar distress signals that end up being nothing. So whatever is going on with Kallus, they're going to abandon him because Vader spoke, and they are going to listen to him. I mean, they haven't seen what happens in The Empire Strikes Back yet, but it stands to reason that Vader has already put his stamp on how he feels if people don't listen to what he says when he says it. So I thought this just reinforced the power of Vader. Even when he's not there, just the mention of his name completely changes the scope of what happens.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I had a Spaceballs moment when you said they didn't see the Empire yet. They're putting in the tape. And
we're at now. When will now be then? Soon.
It looks like we're running a little low on our coffee, so we're going to wrap this up real quick. But there's definitely themes here of sacrifice, the clones willing to stay behind. Kanan turns the ship around, and I think this does two things. He literally turns the ship around. He also turns around his way of thinking, too. As I said at the top of this, there are a lot of metaphor here that helped us to understand more of these characters, and I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, sacrifice is a big one. You mentioned it earlier, and Rex and them looking to die for their cause, and if it means going out on a good note, that was what they're built for. You know, it's their duty is. And even in this kind of towards the end of this chapter, we see, you know, Rex looking to take that on when they're looking ready to take him out, and he kind of closes his eyes and says, okay, bring it on. This is my last shot type thing. And then of course, you know, they turn the ship around and come back to help him out. It shows a lot for the character of Rex himself. He's a lot more stronger than we think, even through all the trials and tribulations he's been through. And I guess maybe I expect him to be a little more kooky. But I mean, he seems very strong, and I hope that, we get to see him, you know, throughout the series to get to know him a little more in this older version of himself, to see how he really, you know, feels throughout this episode and all these characters.
I mentioned at the top of the show that I thought these two episodes could have probably been compressed into one. The problem with that would have been I would have then complained that Kanan had too big of a 180 in one episode. So basically there's no pleasing Jeff is what we're learning tonight.
That's the lesson.
Yes. Which anybody who knows me will tell you is the truth. But I do like the journey that the characters go on, and we have, you know, several characters going on several journeys, and that's great storytelling. We got people working at the top of their game on this show, and I'm just excited to see where the rest of the season takes us. I wasn't really on board with the first episode, but as soon as the second episode got here, I thought, okay, I see what they're doing. So it was worth the trip, and it was a good 45 minutes well spent.
Well, let's before we wrap, we need to talk about Ahsoka and Rex's reunion. For my money, it literally, like, it brought a few tears to my eyes. It didn't come down the face, but I thought it was so beautiful the way that they respond to each other, the way they embrace, kind of the hesitation before they did so, and him teasing her about how she looked older. And right. She almost seems sort of shy and kind of taken aback. It was so sweet. It was just a great moment between those two.
Yeah, she seemed more like the Ahsoka from the Clone Wars. And it's just like, you know, seeing your big brother or a teacher that you haven't seen in years, you know, will put you right back in that frame of mind that you were in the last time you saw them. And I thought that was a nice touch. And again, you know, the animators and Ashley Eckstein's voice acting in that scene were just phenomenal, because she did sound a little less mature when she was dealing with Rex than she had up until that point.
I like that. I agree with that, Jeff. I now that you say that, I think, oh yeah, she was kind of, you know, this we've seen her in Rebels. We've seen her. She's very straightforward, very serious. She doesn't make really that many jokes. She's very the Jedi master that we've seen her to grow into. And in this scene, meeting with Rex again, she kind of breaks those barriers on it, and she hugs him. That's something we haven't seen her do yet. She didn't hug Hera or anything like that. She didn't shake anybody's hand or anything like that out of respect. She breaks her own barriers that she's thrown up over these years of being on her own journey, and you know, hugs an old friend. And you can mention that it is emotional, and it's something that Star Wars tends to do with us as these characters get to interact. It's emotional. And I catch myself all the time too. It's like, oh man, I just, you know, it's cool to see that, because as these characters connect, we see this more and more happen with the comic series and the new films and such. We're going to see all this such stuff connect through all our favorite characters, you know, working throughout generations. And this is just one of those opportunities to be able to, you know, see how these connect. Rebels will connect with Clone Wars by some means, not all about it, but it's these little moments that we're going to see hopefully throughout this entire season that will just kind of be nice and enjoyable.
Very good. Well, guys, any last minute thoughts or reflections on this episode?
Other than what I've already said, I think they covered a lot of emotional ground in very little time. So that makes up for a little bit for the lack of real narrative story, because there just wasn't a lot that happened in these two episodes. But it's all in the service of watching these characters go on a journey. And when you can have that much character development in an animated program that is ostensibly for children, I think it's a credit to the entire creative staff.
Corey, what about you? Anything else you want to add before we give our final grade?
Sure. You know, when Marvel started, we start out with these brand new characters we've never seen before. We get introduced to them, and everybody's wondering, where's the Clone Wars characters? Where's Luke? And where's all these characters we know of throughout this time period? And here we are. We see Ahsoka come back, and now we're seeing Rex and some of the clones come back, and seeing this stuff, it's so nice to be able to connect and get back into Star Wars and be able to see how it does connect. And this meeting these characters in season two, it just restores my faith in the such a good storytelling that has been done throughout the series. And it's nice to be able to see, you know, our questions answered too. I feel like I'm getting that part of it where, okay, here's some of the clones. We could see their story. We could see Ahsoka's story. Everybody wonders these things, and they're doing their due diligence as far as taking these characters they're beloved to those our fandom, and you know, telling us what happened so far. So I feel like we're getting some true stories as far as seeing what's happened in between some of the bigger moments between the films. So I think, like you said, the storytelling is really well done. I think they're really keeping up with bringing great characters back into the franchise.
I agree. I will say that I do think a lot happens. It's more of a character piece, but it's important because Kanan changes a lot, and I think it's going to be up and down for him. And that would be more authentic if it were that way. And that's how we are as human beings. I mean, there are plenty of lessons that I still have to relearn, even though I've learned them 1,000 times. It's part of being human. It's the human dynamic that makes Kanan a rich character. Not only does he change his mind and go back and save the lives of people who potentially their people killed his people. He watched his master murdered by clones. Yet he goes back and saves clones after hiding from who he is as a person. And not only that, but maybe more significantly, he brings the clones back to Hera. Now that's big, because he would have never done that before. Because Hera, you could say he values more than anyone, and he brings the clones to her. That's
so
that's
you're
strong.
Saying the trust factor is a big part of this. I mean, he's yes. journeyed through this to be able to. So I see what you're saying. I mean, I agree with that. I think that's an interesting aspect. I hadn't thought about him bringing, you know, somebody that's a potential threat on his end to his home and to, yeah, you said it, the ghost ship and his loved ones. So yeah, it's interesting.
So guys, final grade on this one.
I will say the last one I gave a B and I didn't really care for it. So this one I'm giving an A because I really enjoyed the sequence in the sandstorm. I enjoyed all of the, like we talked about, the character development, enjoyed seeing the relationships grow, and enjoyed seeing Ahsoka, you know, sort of turn into Padawan Ahsoka for just a moment when she was greeting Rex. So yeah, it's an A for me.
I'm going to give it an A minus. I thought it was really interesting, really insightful as far as the characters. I love what's going on with Ezra and Rex. Kanan is a fountain of entertainment for me and insight into the psyche of the Jedi. Probably, as I said before, maybe the most human Jedi that we've ever experienced. So it was a very good episode and definitely back more on track with what I like out of Rebels.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, putting these two episodes together, they're definitely a first and second part, and this was a nice wrap up of what we'd seen before. I did enjoy the battle a lot. It was a lot of fun use of some of the vehicles, and of course the trust issues that come out that we mentioned, and you know, just moving these characters forward. I don't ever feel like they've moved backwards or regress. I always feel like they're moving forward and pushing into some of these trials they're looking to face, and pushing them further while adding new characters into the fold. I also want to mention that very last scene where they're walking down the hallway with the rebels, and I feel like there's a big group. The group is growing, and I just thought to myself, okay, they're really going to tell a lot of stories here and involve quite a different number of parties, you know, of group. I hope they would stay with the crew of the Ghost so much as, you know, pushing the story forward, but yet we can salt and pepper some of these characters in along the way and add some, you know, head knocking and some different relationships. And then, like we said, like we saw throughout this episode, just grow them even further. So I'm excited to see. It's an A for me. I agree. It is a nice cap off. So I enjoyed it.
Very good. Well, great, guys. We love hearing what everyone else has to say too. Please send us an email and MP3 with your thoughts on the first couple of episodes of Rebels. And it looks like the next one coming up is going to feature Sarah Michelle Gellar's debut in the Star Wars universe. We look forward to talking about that. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for Rebels Reactions. Before we go, Jeff and Corey, let everyone know where they can reach you.
Well, I am on Twitter at TheJeffMcGee. I'm also on Twitter at MarvinDogMedia. You can hear all of my shows on MarvinDogMedia.com, Talking Toys with Taylor and Jeff. The pilot episode and Bantha Banter, a Star Wars chat show. You can also hear me on Comics with Kenobi with my good friend Matt Moore, talking about the latest offerings from Marvel Comics in the Star Wars universe. And I'm also weekly on Assembly of Geeks, featuring Scott Murray and Amy Hipnorowski, discussing all things geek-centric for the week.
That's a lot, Jeff. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, and I remembered it all. Yes, not to mention, oh, and I have a blog before on Coffee with Kenobi as well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
And he also can be found every at least once a month on Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi, yeah. I myself am on Twitter at Corey Club, and I'm on Facebook all around, you know, Coffee with Kenobi page and whatnot. I don't do a whole lot most recently, just things getting busy, life getting busy. But, you know, I'm out there as far as getting in contact with me on social media or through our Facebook page. You can contact me or email me at Corey C. at coffeewithkenobi.com.
Well, there you go. And I host Coffee with Kenobi with Corey Club and Jeff McGee. And you can find me at Mr. Zehr, Z-E-H-R on Twitter. And I also blog for StarWars.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us for Rebels Reactions. We look forward to chatting with you all in the future.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.